So the theme for this retreat is wisdom, or the Pali word is panya, and the most common way of referring to it in English is as wisdom. Some people have referred to it or translated as discernment. I'm particularly fond of insight for it. And the reason I like insight is that insight evokes a little more what you see directly. And in my mind, wisdom has a little bit the connotations of learned wisdom. You learn to really, you know, you read a good book on Buddhism and now you have wisdom about Buddhism. You know, some idea you can carry with you. And even if you have developed wisdom on your own about something, then it becomes a wisdom you carry with you. You understand something in a certain way and you carry that understanding. Whereas insight is something that you really see and penetrate in the present. And one of the central definitions of wisdom in this tradition is to see things as they are. And so this ability to really see. But wisdom shouldn't be seen as being something you hold alone. There's a long tradition in Buddhism of saying that there's two wings to Buddhism. There's wisdom and compassion. And I like to think of that that they're not, you know, since I don't have any wings that I know of, I'd like to think that one eye is my wisdom eye, and my other eye is my compassion eye. And when I look out into the world through those two eyes, they somehow merge together, they blend together and kind of become one. But I need both. And so this idea of developing both compassion, love, care for this world, and having clear insight and really seeing with penetrating capacity what's really here, what's going on, is the two kind of supporting kind of features of our practice and for moving forward and being wise in this life, being compassionate in this life. Well, there's many definitions from the Buddha about what wisdom is. Perhaps in different contexts, wisdom is different things. One of the nice ones that I like is just because you speak a lot doesn't mean you're wise. Someone who is calm, without hate or fear, is a wise one. That's a nice one. Not a lot of book learning in that. If the Buddha was going to praise someone for their maturity, he would call them a wise person. And kind of the importance of this tradition, the wisdom. And someone who was the opposite of wise, he would call a fool. And when I first saw that in the suttas, I thought, well, how could he call someone a fool? Isn't that kind of mean? But I think it's more, you know, it's kind of nice actually to call someone a fool instead of calling them a sinner. Instead of a saint or a sinner, it's a wise person and a fool, because a fool can stop being a fool. A fool can become wise. And so it's just a temporary thing that somehow you've done something foolish, seen something foolish, you have some delusion, and the practice is, so that's normal enough. The practice is to cultivate the insight, the wisdom, the clarity, the understanding, so we can go through our world and not be a fool, but be wise. And what is it to be a fool, and what is it to be wise? Another definition of a wise person, and by inference, the opposite is a foolish person, is the following. A wise person does not intend harm for oneself, harm for other, harm for both self and other, or harm for the whole world. A wise person, a person of great wisdom, considers the welfare of oneself, the welfare of others, the welfare of both self and others, and the welfare of the whole world. So again, this is not like, you know, try to get a PhD in Buddhist studies to get wise. This is, it's a kind of very practical, caring, compassionate concern for the welfare of people. And somehow the wisdom has that quality. And so some of these forms of wisdom that the tradition emphasizes, which might not seem particularly concerned with other people's welfare, it's very much concerned about your welfare. The whole point of the path is to bring welfare to self and others and to the world. But to self, to really plumb into the depths of who we are and really meet ourselves in the fullness of who we are, and in that depth and fullness, to have some kind of penetrating understanding, a new perception, a new perspective on this life that is liberating, that's compassionate, that's wise, that helps us to live wisely and to live in a way that's caring and loving for the world that we are in. So we're going to take wisdom as a theme, and we'll go through six different areas that we've kind of identified for this retreat to focus on for wisdom. Tomorrow will be the wisdom of knowing what is healthy and unhealthy. You know, if you want to live a healthy life, it's good to know. And that's my language for it. The more traditional language is what's skillful and unskillful. And that simple distinction can be your teacher and your guide for finding your way on this path. And then there's this fantastic teaching in this Buddhist tradition called the Four Noble Truths. And the Buddha said that a wise person is someone who sees these Four Noble Truths. And then one of the very profound teachings of this tradition that really kind of clarifies a lot about how things work and how our minds work is the teachings about conditionality. And so to become wise through this understanding of the conditioned nature, dependent origin, nature of our experience. It's the next talk. And then a talk on the three characteristics. Part of this penetrating insight, penetrating wisdom of this tradition is to really have not believe in the three characteristics, not understand them, but really be able to see them as they manifest in our lives moment by moment. And then the wisdom of non-clinging. Non-clinging is, you know, if clinging is a source of suffering, non-clinging is the freedom from suffering. And then the final talk will be about this quote that I just gave on a wise person considers the welfare of self, the welfare of others, welfare of self and others, and the welfare for the whole world. And then we'll go home to the world and do that. Hopefully. And final thing I'll say is that, you know, the theme of the retreat is wisdom, and I'm always a little bit hesitant. I love wisdom. I love the topic. But I'm also a little bit hesitant, a little bit around wording it wisdom, because it's a little bit abstract. Whereas the quote I just gave about a wise person focuses on a wise person. And I relax, because it's really about personal change, personal growth, personal freedom. It's really about, we're talking about people here. We're not talking about philosophy. We're talking about something which is practical and useful and really meant to touch the heart, transform the heart, benefit the heart, mature the heart, grow the heart. That leads to our, to quote the Buddha, that leads to our growth, to increase, and to thriving. Isn't that nice? So I hope that as we go through this retreat, we'll thrive through our deeper connection to wisdom. Thank you.
So now the next part of our evening is to formally begin our practice and our living together. And we do so by kind of in a ceremonial kind of a way, by taking refuges and precepts. And so I'll begin by saying a few words about refuges. I think probably all of you know what the refuges are, the triple refuges. And the English translation of this is, I go to the Buddha for refuge, I go to the Dharma for refuge, and then I go to the Sangha for refuge. For many years when I chanted this, I had the sense that, you know, there's something out there in the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha. So I go there for refuge. But when I got to know the Chinese translation of this, over time I become really fond of this notion that carried by the Chinese character that's used to translate this, which has a sense of returning or coming home to the Buddha, and coming home to the Sangha, to the Dharma, and coming home to the Sangha. And so this sense of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, it's not so much of out there, but the Buddha that represented wisdom and compassion that Gil just mentioned, and Dharma, the way things are, that is happening right here, right now. And the Sangha, to me, it's kind of a field of goodness. It's because the people who are in this field are practicing the good way, an ethical way, skillfully, with full of wisdom, compassion. And so we're coming to this field to take a refuge. And so that's what we're going to do together. We'll chant the refuges in Pali. I think we can probably chant it all together. If you don't quite know the words, we're going to chant this three times. Maybe the first time you can kind of listen, and the second time you can join in, the third time you're just a part of it. And maybe evoke this sense of coming home to the Buddha, and Dharma, and Sangha. And so I'll begin, you can just join along with me. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhamman saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami, Duryambi Buddham saranam gacchami, Duryambi Dhamma saranam gacchami, Duryambi Sangham saranam gacchami, Tadiyambi Buddham saranam gacchami, Tadiyambi Dhamman saranam gacchami, Tadiyambi Sangham saranam gacchami.
as a refuge in the Sangha, we kind of look at how can we support each other as a community in a way. One way to take refuge in the Sangha is to understand that we are supporting each other, that we can feel safe in this community together. In a way that we can be a refuge for each other is by connecting to the training of the precepts, connecting to these training rules, these training guidelines, refraining from killing living beings, refraining from taking that which is not given, refraining from, in this case on retreat, refraining from intentional sexual activity, but in lay life, refraining from creating harm through sexuality, refraining from false speech, and refraining from intoxicants that cloud the mind and lead to heedlessness. And so this is very much speaking to what Gil was pointing to of the way in which we take care of the world. And in this taking care of the world through non-harming, we're committing to not putting harm into the world in this way. We're also taking care of ourselves, because we are, these precepts are understood both to be a gift to others, in that we're creating a field of safety, giving all others around us this gift of fearlessness. And we are giving ourselves the gift of blamelessness. And so we're protecting both others and ourselves, and allowing the mind to deepen into the wisdom of non-clinging, the wisdom of things as they are. If we are putting harm into the world, it's very hard for the mind to settle into that place where we can really connect with what's actually happening, because our minds are kind of fighting with themselves, fighting with regret, remorse, and not able to settle so fully. And so these precepts offer a support for us in our practice. We're looking at an intention in our actions together, an intention that supports non-harming, but also cultivates peace, caring, connection, love, compassion for each other. This other I that Gil was speaking of, the other wing. Wisdom motivates us to refrain from harming. And refraining from harming creates the conditions that more wisdom can grow. And love is in the mix when we connect to our hearts and others. I've actually seen this happen kind of surprisingly at one point. I was doing a simple kind of practice around not killing the ants in my kitchen. And was being very careful to, you know, sweep them up and take them outside or kind of corral them. At one point I was corralling them with soap and having them kind of find their way back to the little hole that they'd come in. And then I got impatient and I started scooping up the ants on a piece of paper and dropping them back by their hole. And at some point in this whole process, because it was quite a long process, at one point during this process, over near the place where the ants were entering my kitchen, this little hole in my sink, One ant, I've never seen an ant do this before. The ant was standing on its back two legs. And it was scanning the environment like this. And my heart just about broke. Because I felt that the gesture, I've never seen an ant do this, but it looked like a gesture of alarm to me. And I could just kind of imagine, you know, what are these ants thinking? You know, it's like they've been over there and suddenly they're back over here. And how did I get there? And my heart just broke for these beings who didn't know what was happening in their world. And so my practice was non-harming, and it brought me to compassion. It was beautiful to witness that, actually, to witness the connection between those two. And the each of these precepts is said to be paired with a beautiful quality that comes along as we commit to connecting to that precept. So refraining from killing is connected with compassion. That as we refrain from killing, that quality of compassion is possible. It creates the conditions that make it possible for compassion to grow. Refraining from taking what's not given creates the conditions for contentment. And this conditioned peace here, this is pointing back to wisdom that Gil mentioned, the wisdom of what conditions other things to happen for us. And so the precepts are a deep condition that supports beautiful qualities, supports the possibility of beautiful qualities. Refraining from creating harm through sexuality. The traditional language for what's cultivated there is fidelity. And yet I feel too that it cultivates a kind of an integrity, that we are exploring the possibility of not allowing our sexuality to leak out in ways that would create harm. And then the refraining from false speech creates the conditions for the quality of truthfulness. And refraining from intoxicants creating the conditions for clarity of mind. And so as we take these precepts together, we can reflect on not only that they are supporting others, but that they're also supporting ourselves. A couple of things around these precepts here on retreat. Most of you, I think, are familiar with these precepts. But I'll point to just a couple here. One around the refraining from creating harm through sexuality. That sexual energy is such a potent force in our lives, and it can sometimes even unwittingly contact others and create a feeling of a lack of safety. And so to really observe, you know, sometimes this energy on retreats can kind of filter out into what's sometimes called a Vipassana romance. You have never met the person that is walking so beautifully, and you just fall in love with them. This kind of thing can happen. It's not uncommon for us to have this experience of feeling like we've met our soulmate on the retreat and we've not even spoken to them. And so sometimes we can, with that kind of situation, start kind of gravitating towards that person, putting our shoes next to theirs, maybe, you know, leaving them little things on their cushion. please refrain from doing these things. You know, to the energy that you're feeling in some ways is connected with connection and care, and that's beautiful. I'm not wanting you to repress that. But what would be beautiful is to explore the feeling and refrain from the action. Refrain from acting on those energies, because we don't know where other people are in their own place, in their own retreat. And these kind of what seem like innocent and sweet actions can have very different impact on people than you might intend. And so observe. You don't have to repress the feelings, but observe them rather than acting on them. This is a lot of what we do with our wisdom of mindfulness. And two, in this place, it can be helpful. You know, many people on this retreat have practiced on a lot of retreats in the past and may have the practice of not making eye contact with other people on retreat. And if you're newer on retreat, that can feel a little uncomfortable. And yet for me on my very first retreat, this felt very uncomfortable. I kind of found at some point that I felt like I had to have contact with others in order to know that I was okay. And so this was a kind of an exploration to just watch my mind around this and watch the discomfort around that. So there are probably a lot of people in this retreat who will be practicing in that way. We're not so strict about it here to say, you know, keep your eyes 66 feet in front of you. Do not look up. If you happen to look up and, see somebody, that's okay. But please don't try to intentionally make eye contact with people. That is almost a little form of letting some of that energy potentially out into the world. And again, we don't know how that will land for people. It's surprisingly intimate eye contact at times. And likewise with physical contact, if somebody is standing someplace and you might come up behind them and just like touch them on the shoulder or something to let them know you're there. That may be something that might not have the impact that you would expect. It might have a very different effect. And so refraining from physical contact, giving people space, basically giving people space for their practice. And so we'll take the precepts together in English, and I'll do this in call and response. We're not chanting it, but just to have us all speak out loud together these commitments that we're sharing as a community, these commitments to non-harming, living life together in a way that supports a community of safety. I undertake the training to refrain from killing living beings. I undertake the training to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the training to refrain from intentional sexual activity. I undertake the training to refrain from false speech.
I undertake the training to
I undertake the training to refrain from intoxicants which cloud the mind and lead to heedlessness. Thank you for taking the refuges and precepts for this community. Shall we sit together for a few more minutes?